We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This is the Carolina Insider from Learfield.
It's the Carolina Insider, Jones. Adam. Adam, you've got me all choked up at the beginning of the pod.
It's not even the Christmas Spectacular yet.
Man, we have a lot to do today because the list of topics is long. Tar Heels, of course, about to face Kentucky in Vegas. Adam's favorite place. And that's a big game. We're going to talk about it. The fever for the Sun Bowl is reaching a high level. And I don't really have anything to talk about the Sun Bowl, although we do have a couple of texts or a couple of tweets of people who've given us some Sun Bowl information.
I ordered my Sun Bowl tickets this week, Jones.
Oh, it's all coming together.
I ordered 5.
Wow.
I feel like that may have taken the Tar Heel sales count to astronomical levels.
I bet bells went off. Sirens. And we have a lot of other stuff, including the fact, Adam, did you know so many people hated the green apple Skittles until now? See, now we all know.
But there was the one person who loves them.
Well, there was somebody, and I can't even remember, was bad-mouthing us, saying how bad purple life's earth.
Yeah, that blew my mind.
Yeah.
I didn't know anyone didn't like purple or red. It was a she, I think, so I'm going to say she. I didn't know there were any people like that in America. I just assumed that as a nation, we had all agreed purple and red were the best, and we were doing the other colors because we couldn't just have all purple and all red all the time. That'd be too much of a good thing, so we threw in some other junk. But there's people who don't like purple and red.
Yeah. Now, I will say that the purple lifesaver, there is a purple lifesaver, but it's not grape. It's like passion fruit.
Yeah, that's not the
same.
And
so it doesn't even matter. It's not even in my discussion. Here it is. It's at Cave Woman B. And her name is Carolina James.
So I believe I'm safe to say that's a female.
Oh yeah, it is. Her picture's right there. Assuming that picture is her.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Mrs. at Cave Woman B, we will have to disagree. All right. What do you want to start with? We got a lot to talk about. What do you want to start with? You want to start with Kentucky?
I guess so.
Oh, and this is what we have to start with, and then we'll get to Kentucky. This whole Wake Forest thing.
Yeah, that's the craziest ACC story ever.
It's really crazy. Yeah. And so I'm sure pretty much everybody knows it by now, but you know, Wake Forest, after the Louisville game this year, found evidence that Louisville had somehow gained some intel on Wake Forest's either play sheet or playbook or whatever it may be. And so they did this investigation. And after, I think a lot of people had just kind of forgotten about it. And then it comes out that it was their radio color analyst, this guy named Tommy Elrod. I don't know him that well. I mean, he's only been doing it a couple years. He was a former coach, and then he did not get retained by the new staff, and so he slid over to the analyst role on the radio, and he had been, like, sliding info on the team to the opposition. Adam, I mean, it is a, especially for people in media and in radio, I mean, you and I did radio for the baseball team together for a long time, and I mean, you were getting detailed scouting reports from the coaches on the opposition, and of course we had information on the Tar Heels themselves, and you're very closely, you know what we're doing in football and basketball too on the radio. I mean, it blows my mind that a guy who played at Wake, was a coach at Wake, and was still employed there as a radio announcer would do this to his own alma mater. I mean, just a mind-blowing story.
Well, as I've thought about it, I can't even really say this without laughing, but this is the exact situation. It would be like if Eric Montross was giving information to other teams about the Tar Heels.
I mean, it's just insane.
That you doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, you would just I have to think they being Wake Forest, were totally stunned, right? I mean, there's no way that they were anything but just obviously hurt and stunned.
Well, and I read a couple articles in the Winston-Salem Journal online about it. And just a few things about this situation. One, it seems like everybody loves this guy.
Yeah, I do. And again, I just don't know him very well.
Two, Wake, when he was not retained in the way that often happens, had sort of made up a job for him with the investment services firm that handles Wake stuff. He had a full-time job there.
Wow.
That he now has resigned this week because of this, I assume, not just because he didn't like the job anymore.
Yes, I would assume.
And so I guess 4 or 5 years ago, Tommy Elrod's newborn son died at 8 days old. So that's a terrible story, and I guess the whole Wake community had sort of banded behind him. But I think what even takes it to the next level of weird is Louisville's response.
Yeah. They were just like, what's the big deal? Leave us alone. We've got the Citrus Bowl to get ready for.
What are you thinking?
Yeah, I don't know.
Hey, guys. So their AD said, yep, we got some plays.
But they didn't really run them.
Wake didn't run those plays. But Louisville coach Bobby Petrino had said back in November he knew nothing about it. They didn't get anything like that. And then the AD said, yeah, we got the plays, but we're trying to get ready for the Citrus Bowl, so why don't all you people pay attention to that?
Yeah.
Also, did you hear about our Heisman Trophy? It's just so weird. And so now it looks like Wake Forest also contacted Army, but didn't contact anyone else. What's going on? I don't understand.
I don't know.
You know what's going to happen, too, and how it's going to affect your life, Jones, which is what's really most important. It's going to make coaches even crazier.
Well, yeah. And, you know, you do get some information, as you would expect. Although, I will say, it's not like I have the play sheets for the Tar Heels before the game.
Right.
And I think if I asked for them, they would just say, no, get out of here. I mean, to me, you do get, of course, some more information just because you're around it and you build up that trust level with the coaches, and they know in 99.9% of the instances, other than Tommy Elrod, that you're there doing a job, but you're also there for them. I mean, that's what this role is. But he clearly was getting even higher access, I think, than is normal.
Because he had played there.
Right, and I think that's part of it. And being a coach there, you know there was an office staff member or a GA or somebody where he's like, hey, would you mind sliding me this extra stuff? It helps me with my preparation. And then to turn around and do that. I mean, when I saw that, I couldn't believe it.
No.
It really is an odd story. And I don't think it's over either. I mean, I'll be interested to see after the ACC kind of goes through and talks to everybody kind of what happens. I know Carolina has said no, that not only did they not receive any information, that they did not even have any contact with this guy. And I would expect that's what everybody's going to say. But I would also expect that there's going to be ways to find out if this person did indeed contact or try to give plays to people.
There's just so many odd elements And, like, we remember when the only firsthand example I would have would be when we were doing baseball. And as you said, a lot of times we would have Carolina scouting report on the other team.
Right.
But remember when the game was over, how careful we would be to make sure that went with us wherever we went.
Yeah.
But yet somehow Louisville's coaches had that exact same thing and just left it in the box.
Yeah.
We don't need those. Just let them pick it up.
Of all the things to clean up, you would think that would be it.
I got my Diet Coke. I got my my press pass. And I'm going to leave those plays right there that Wake Forest gave us. But then also, did you see Jim Grobe's quotes?
No, I did not see those.
He talked to, I think it was Andrea Adelson from ESPN, and basically said, well, when I was at Wake, we had open practices, and anybody who wanted to come could come, and we really had no way to keep them out, so I don't really understand what the problem is. Basically saying, like, well, when I was there, we won the ACC, and we had open practices, so I don't know what everybody's complaining about. I thought that was weird.
The whole thing's just weird. I mean, and I do think, I mean, there is some kind of communication between all coaches. If you have a guy who was your old defensive coordinator and now he's at Penn State and Penn State has already played whoever and you're about to play them. I mean, but all of that is very accepted. Mm-hmm. And I think, and you know, game film is, I mean, all of that stuff. So to me, none of that is a big deal. This to me is much, much different than that, and much, much different than what Jim Grobe, that quote that you just, I mean, it's just, would Jim Grobe have kept his practices open if the Louisville assistant coaches were standing on the sideline the week that they were playing Louisville? I wouldn't think so. And so it's just a totally different deal.
Well, and it's like you said, a lot of how you develop a scouting report is talking to your buddies who are coaches at other teams who have played that team.
Sure.
That goes on all the time.
Yeah.
But that's not this. And don't you think the ACC's got to do something?
Yeah, they will. I think they will. They've already sent out a statement saying they were going to investigate. But I think they have to do something. Something has to occur for them to say, hey, and maybe that's only with Louisville or maybe if they find something else. But, I mean, there has to be some kind of judgment on this. It can't just be, oh, okay, well, we get it. Yeah, that guy was giving you stuff, but they didn't run those plays, so it's cool.
Well, that's why I thought Louisville's statement was so weird, because they just flat out came out and said, like, yeah, we got it. Is that really what you wanted to say? I mean, you are in the ACC, even though you're kind of operating like you're on your own out there.
Yeah.
It's still, you said that a guy from that school gave you that school's plays. You can't do that.
And just one more thing. I mean, even, like, every now and then, I don't do this every single game, but sometimes I'll talk to the opposing radio announcer. And at least in, like, the hour before the game or something, I'll say, oh, this guy may not, you know, not quite sure if this guy's going to play or, you know, he's really been playing well the last couple of games. But, I mean, nothing like that. Just what a crazy scenario.
Well, and when you do talk to the other radio guy, or like if we're talking to the other coach or something, there's like that 30 seconds before where you're just joshing with them.
Right, yeah.
You're like, you're just bros in the old hoops profession.
You and Tony Bennett, just bros.
That's often how it is. Even then, you're so careful not to say anything.
Right.
If they're like, this is a hypothetical example, but if they're like, so how's Joel Berry doing? You're like, oh, I don't think he can walk. I mean, even if you just saw him run like the 100-yard dash 5 seconds before, well, I mean, they amputated, but hopefully he'll be able to walk again soon.
Yeah.
You don't even take the chance of saying something that might in some third-party removed way hurt the team you're with.
Yeah. Just wild.
I mean, that guy.
Oh, done.
He's done on many levels.
Yeah. I mean, what job in athletics will he ever get again?
No job.
None.
None.
Yeah, dude, that's tough. I mean, that's just, yeah, I don't know where you go. But then again, don't go giving the plays of your team to other teams.
Well, sooner or later, it may not be sooner, it'll probably be later, he's going to talk.
Oh, yeah, and we'll have the 18 months from now, Tommy Elrod was in the darkest point of his career, you know.
And it's going to be fascinating to see what his rationale is. I mean, he's got a family who you would think he would be thinking about. So what is it, just pure bitterness that he wasn't retained? Or was there something else? But it's going to be fascinating to see what he says and why he thought it was a good idea.
One more thing, and I know we're not here just to talk about this Wake story.
But it's so crazy.
I know.
It's one of the craziest ACC stories ever.
It is. No, I agree with that. The other thing I think is interesting about it is how I'll say maybe 40% of the reaction has been, oh, it's just Wake Forest. Who cares? Dude, if that had been Texas, yeah. if that had been Ohio State, if that had been, shoot, if that had been Carolina and NC State.
Yeah.
I think the, and it's gotten a ton of national coverage, don't get me wrong, but I think it would be even more an explosive story than it already has been. I mean, can you imagine that happening at like Auburn? That guy, that person would be beaten to a pulp.
Think about how mad they got in the SEC when that guy poisoned their trees.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was just their horticulture.
Yeah.
This is their actual football game plan.
Unbelievable, dude. Unbelievable. All right. Let's turn the page to Kentucky. Tar Heels, Kentucky coming up in Vegas on Saturday. This is a 5:45 Eastern time game. And Adam, you know, this is, as we kind of lightly referenced the other day, these are just two different programs that have both achieved at the highest of levels. I think each of them clearly in the elite of this sport. But they've just done it in totally different ways. And that really is a historical statement, but particularly now. I mean, particularly in the way that John Calipari has decided to build this Kentucky team with a lot of success, and the way that Roy Williams wants to build his Carolina teams with a lot of success. And it's just, it's always interesting to watch these two different styles. And I don't mean styles of play, because actually they're somewhat similar in the way they like to play on the court as far as getting up and down and not having a ton of like just straight play calls. Just in the way that they have achieved their success.
Yeah, there's definitely two different ways to look at it. There's the long view, which is the whole program thing, which goes back to even when Dean Smith was the coach here, and you felt like the two programs were going at it totally differently then also as well. The differences between Coach Smith and Adolph Rupp in just terms of how they handled everything seemed to be diametrically opposed. And then Rick Pitino took the job at Kentucky, and you still felt like it was completely different. And there was the great game in 95 in the NCAA tournament when Kentucky had already made their celebration reservations and Carolina beat them to go to the Final Four, and Rasheed Wallace had a great game and also did some other entertaining things. And so it just always feels like they play games that matter. And the attention this game has gotten feels like it's one of those games too, because you see people talking about it nationally who don't usually talk about basketball at this time of year. It's usually all football in December. But when Carolina and Kentucky play, people notice, even if the game's taking place in Las Vegas. And I would rather play the game on campus. Either one, either campus would be better, in my opinion. But that's where the event's going to be, so everybody's going to go out 2,000 miles away and do it there, and people will notice. It'll be on national television. It'll be a big deal, and that's what it should be for these two programs.
So many freshmen on Kentucky. I mean, their best players are all freshmen. Not that that is unique for them, but, you know, De'Aaron Fox, freshman point guard, Malik Monk, a freshman guard who is just an explosive athlete. Bam Adebayo, who is from Washington, North Carolina, was the Gatorade Player of the Year in this state, is a freshman. Isaiah Briscoe is a sophomore, one of their better guys, as well. Sasha Kalia Jones, who lists his hometown as Chapel Hill. I think his mom lives in Chapel Hill. I think that's right. He went to school up in Virginia. But a lot of guys that Carolina, and Roy Williams has said this, he said, hey, they tried to recruit those guys too. And it's just, it is, and you know, from an outsider perspective, it gets a little tiring about, like, the whole thing last year where John Calipari said every player on his team was going to put their name in for the NBA draft. I mean, just that kind of stuff is so over the top a little bit, in my opinion. But that's what he's done to get them to the point where they are. I mean, whether it is this way or not, the perception is that it's all about those players, and it's all about getting them in and then getting them out as quick as possible to go have success, and he's just there to help them do that. That is the perception that they have built.
He's just the facilitator.
Right.
And he's been doing his thing this week where, you know, they're so young and he doesn't know if they're any good or not. And there was a story where he was talking about he didn't know if they were ready to beat a team like North Carolina that's got all those veterans. Like somehow Carolina went and picked up the veterans on the waiver wire and signed them for just this week. Like, they've got the veterans because that's how they do it. And you've got the young guys because that's how you do it.
Right.
And the young guys are talented. So don't tell me in December they're not good enough to beat Carolina, and in March they're all going to the NBA.
Right.
They didn't get that good in 3 months. They were good already.
Sure.
So it's going to be a good game no matter what anybody says. And, of course, what everybody's sitting there thinking is, Jones, Adam, is Joel Berry going to play? And Joel Berry's not here, so we can't ask him.
Where are you, Joel Berry?
But, I mean, I think barring a setback, I think it would be reasonable to hope that Joel Berry would play. Maybe not 100%, but well enough to play in a game like this.
You know, Roy Williams met with the media on Thursday and was very non-committal as to whether or not Joel Berry would play. And again, the initial time frame was 7 to 10 days, and that time frame has passed. So if he's following that same time frame, then Joel Berry will likely play. But you just don't know for sure until you get out there. And Roy Williams said that himself. He said he didn't know whether to feel optimistic or pessimistic because he hasn't really seen him do a whole lot yet. And I think that's important to remember, too, is Carolina really the Tar Heels have not practiced a ton this week. I mean, this was the exam week, the kind of second half of the exam period for the end of the first semester in Chapel Hill. And so I think Thursday was the first full practice day that Carolina had. The rest of the days were either off or they did run and shoot practices, which are just the way they sound. So I don't think Roy Williams was being coy in those statements. I think that was the truth. He just hadn't seen them work yet when he made those statements to the press on Thursday.
Well, and Carolina's went out to Las Vegas on Thursday night. And so that means they are going to get to practice in the arena, which I think is a plus because sometimes in games like this you don't get to.
Yep.
I mean, we've both been on trips where Carolina goes to play in the Carrier Dome at noon on a Saturday, goes on Friday night, never sees the inside of the Carrier Dome until they run out to warm up.
Yep.
So I think it'll help some to get on site and get there and have a day to sort of get ready because it is such a long trip. But Carolina's taken a long trip already this year. And if you'll remember, the first game on the front end of that long trip, they didn't look so good. And the post-exam game has been very unpredictable here in the last decade or so.
You know what? I thought this was interesting. Since Carolina returned from Maui, they, as a team, are shooting 42% from the floor. Now, two of those games were without Joel Berry. In Maui, they shot 55% from the floor. They're shooting 65% from the free throw line. They shot 80% at the free throw line in Maui as a team. And I don't know what those numbers say other than they haven't been as good shooting the basketball since they got back. I don't know the reason for that necessarily, other than they played in a really tough environment in Bloomington and then they've been without their point guard the last two games. So it'll be interesting to see how Carolina plays offensively because I do think you cannot beat Kentucky. You're not going to beat them. I shouldn't say you can't. You're probably not going to beat them 65-61 or 58-53. This game isn't going to be that. It's going to be 91-86 or something like that. You have to score at a high level, I think, to have an opportunity to beat them because they are a very skilled offensive team, a very athletic offensive team. They don't shoot the three particularly well, and they don't try to. I mean, they really try to get to the rim. They play above the rim, but you got to score. You have to shoot well and score to beat these guys.
I think that's one thing that's fun about this matchup is Kentucky is not one of those teams that wants to walk it up.
No, and they're not going to change to play Carolina. Some teams do. They will not.
Right. They're totally happy to run. They know Carolina's going to run. Both sides are going to run. Carolina's going to probably get more transition opportunities in this game than they have in the last couple. That's another reason why Berry is so important because I think part of those shooting numbers is shot selection. Carolina's just taken more bad shots the last couple weeks than they did in Maui because it felt like every time in Maui, even when the shot clock got low, they would make that one extra pass to get a little better shot that you felt good about even if it didn't go in. And there's been some the last couple games that just as soon as they leave the hand, you think, well, even if that goes in, that was a poor choice.
Without Berry, now I gave you all those numbers a second ago. Those were all the games since Maui. Without Berry in these two games, shooting 39% from the field, 29% from three. They only have seven more assists than they have turnovers. 32-25 in the two games against Davidson and Tennessee. So, I mean, there is no question that that has affected what Carolina is doing on the floor. I think there is a question of if he does play, you know, is he just going to be able to slide right? It's not you. This is not a game where you can have a 60% Joel Berry and then expect to achieve at the same kind of level if you had 100% Joel Berry. So all these questions will be answered in Vegas, Adam, your favorite place in the world.
But he's also so important defensively. I mean, yeah. Carolina's going to have to get some turnovers that lead to some running chances, and Berry sets the tone for that because Carolina was also so good defensively in Maui, which they haven't been so much. I mean, Tennessee was crazy hot, but they still were shooting 70% late in the first half. Even if you are crazy hot, you shouldn't be shooting 70%.
Sure.
So I think he'll be important for that reason, and you're right. Las Vegas really is probably one of my favorite places on earth. I think anyone who says, you know what they say about Vegas.
Yeah.
That
it's over. That's over.
Yeah.
That was like 7-10 years ago.
We do all know what they say.
We remember the commercials.
Even without you saying it, we all know.
Yeah. You want to do a couple of tweets?
Sure.
We have a lot.
There was also that good email, remember?
Oh yeah. Well, we'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
We can only be so technologically savvy at one time. This tweet comes from Brian McSorley. He says he loves the pod. Thanks, Brian. And he just returned from work, a work trip to El Paso. And he put Ann Juarez in parentheses. And he would second the recommendation for Carlos and Mickey's. And he would also recommend Cattleman's. So there you go. Couple of food recommendations from Brian in El Paso.
That's a couple of Carlos and Mickey's suggestions. We only have one dinner night.
One dinner night.
In El Paso.
I think it's got to be Carlos and Mickey's, right?
Well, Brian McSorley said so. High noon, as you know from reading your Sun Bowl promotional materials, that's Sun Bowl time.
That seems right for the Sun Bowl to be at high noon, when the sun's at its peak.
Yeah.
Seems to make the most sense.
And like the tumbleweeds are whistling across the 10-yard line. Larry Fedora comes out of the saloon and like opens up the doors.
Another El Paso related tweet. This is from our friend, a guy named Prez. He wants to know, is there going to be a special pod goes to El Paso, to which he calls the hashtag El Podso. I mean, at very minimum, at the very minimum, we're obviously going to talk about El Paso when we return. But... and you're the one who threw this idea out off the air, and I think it's a great idea. So, I mean, right behind me, you see that fine piece of recording equipment?
Yeah.
I honestly think we could do your suggestion, which is Adam and I kind of sit in the back seat while we're driving around El Paso, and we'll just record our conversation as we go through El Paso. It may never see the light of day.
Right.
Or it might be unbelievable.
It might be the El Paso.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, too, I think we could talk to El Paso residents.
That's a good point.
While we're out. I mean, we go to Main Street, El Paso. I don't know if the name of the street is Main Street.
You know what it's called? It's called El Paso Street. We've already discussed this.
That's true. And perhaps we interact with some locals. We get their thoughts on El Paso, on the El Paso.
Yeah.
And where we should go, what we should do. I think that's got a lot of potential.
Man, how are we going to get all this in the very short amount of time that we are in El Paso?
What's the pod equivalent of a Grammy? That's what I think the El Paso could possibly win. If the Christmas Spectacular doesn't take it, El Paso is going to win it.
Couple other tweets. Pat, I think it's Phelan, and Pat is a frequent tweeter as well, wanted to know the five things we want to do while in El Paso. Well, number one's the El Paso. We already know that. You know, I don't know. We will get a lot accomplished while we're there.
There won't be a ton of time. No. We're going to have to be very efficient.
No, yeah, we're talking like half a day that we're going to have free.
At the most.
Really, yeah.
Only due to the benefit of the time change, which they've instituted just for our usage.
Mountain time. Adam Capps wants to know how he can be a guest on the pod. Whew. Get in line, Adam.
Get your jersey in the rafters. That'd be the first step.
Let's see. I think there was one more. There was one more. Where is it? Oh, also enjoyed this. Also, Adam Capps sent me one that said, never let anyone treat you like a yellow starburst. You're a pink starburst. I appreciate it, Adam. Thanks so much, buddy. All right, do you have the email?
Oh, I didn't know. So I wanted to mention also Chris Hostetler, because I thought he had a unique idea. He listens to the pod on 1.5 times speed.
Yeah.
Imagine how smart he gets in a short amount of time.
Well, I think some older generation iPhones have this trouble, I think, sometimes where they play the pod at a quicker speed.
Yeah.
And so it's like we're blowing through our information. And I believe he also referenced a chipmunk-like laugh from you when it said the high speed.
He said it had changed his life.
So, yes, continue doing it, Chris.
The email is from Noah Wolfenstein.
Ooh, nice.
That's an awesome name. He is a junior at UNC who is currently studying abroad in Italy, but still listens to the pod.
Yeah.
So the pod's officially international.
There you go, Noah.
He has a question.
Bonjour. Wait, is that...
I think you were looking for buongiorno.
Hola, is that it?
He has a question regarding former podcast guest Theo Pinson's eventual return.
Yes.
Which Noah hopes will be closer to the beginning of ACC play.
We all do, Noah.
With speaking of former podcast guests, TJ Yates picked up by the Dolphins.
Yeah, he was.
Come on the podcast, get a job in the NFL.
Yeah,
that's how it works. With the solid play at the number two spot from Nate Britt, Kenny Williams, and Brandon Robinson, and UNC's vastly improved three-point numbers this season.
Well, that was right. I think we got this email before the 2-for-17 against Tennessee, but yes.
Yeah.
And the numbers are much better compared to a year ago.
Noah wants to know, could you see Theo coming off the bench even when he returns? Noah thinks Kenny Williams might be more effective in a starting role than Theo, and so could that be the play?
I don't think so, and I say that because... One, I mean, Roy Williams has made such a point to say that Theo Pinson was the starter at that position before he was injured. And so I just don't think that he is going to in any way step away from that, at least at the beginning. Now, if Theo comes back and all of a sudden, you know, it is just absolutely clear that Kenny Williams, for example, is better there and has beaten Theo out in practice, but it is not going to be... That would only occur if it occurs in practice and in the games once Theo is back and healthy. So I think when he returns and is able to go, he is going to slide. Now, I'm not saying the first game that he plays, he's going to be a starter. He may come off the bench the first game he comes back. But I think he will be in that starter role when he returns full time.
And that's, as you said, that's exactly what Roy Williams has said. He said it wouldn't be fair to Theo Pinson if he lost his job because he got hurt. But if someone beats him out when he comes back, that's something totally different.
Sure.
If they beat him out at full strength head-to-head, then it's just like any other situation. But you don't get beaten out because you got hurt. But either way, really, whether it's Theo Pinson coming off the bench or if it's Kenny Williams coming off the bench, you've got a high-energy, good defender, good offensive player who can do some different things coming off the bench, and that makes Carolina a better team.
We have said this before. I really think Kenny Williams' defense is sneaky important, and it's something that Roy Williams keeps. He's not, like, harping on it, but he drops it in there from enough that you know it's something that he thinks is important. And I think we talked about this. I mean, it was a big part of Carolina's victory against Tennessee because he did a great job against Hubs in the second half, and Roy Williams on his radio show when we had the show on Monday, Coach really applauded Kenny's defense against Davidson as well, against Gibbs. Gibbs? Yeah, right. Was that the point guard's name? And so it is clearly something that the coaches have taken notice. And now he's not winning like every defensive award. A lot of times that goes to the more sound defender, if that makes sense. Nate Britt, Nate's won that 5 times in Carolina's 11 games. Because he's an older player who is positionally very good defensively. But I think Kenny Britt's aggressiveness, physicality, ability to go against the top scorer, the top perimeter guy on the other team and do a good job slowing him down, I think that's something that is already important, the coaches have taken note of, and it's something to keep your eye on as the year moves along.
I think a lot of times people misunderstand that defensive player of the game
award
that the coaches give out. It's not most valuable defender in the game. It's who grades out the best.
Right.
You can go to the right spot, get beaten, and still get a plus. And you could eventually win the award.
Right.
But Kenny Williams might jump into a passing lane or body somebody up and take the ball. That might not even be a plus. So there's different ways to win that.
We do have a guest on the show today, and looking forward to our conversation, Adam, with what is, and I don't know if you, I can almost guarantee that as a senior in high school, he didn't think that he was going to leave Carolina. Maybe he did. He's a confident guy. As the all-time leading receiver for Carolina football, but that's exactly what Ryan Switzer has done. And not only the huge punt return numbers in his career, but he has become, statistically, one of the best receivers Carolina football has ever had.
Yeah, it really is a remarkable story because Carolina's had some good receivers.
Especially lately. I mean, I think that's, I mean, between Hakeem Nicks and Dwight Jones and Quinshon Davis, I mean, there have been some guys who were, looked more like a prototypical wide receiver as far as their height and their speed and all that stuff. And then you have Ryan Switzer, who's a shorter guy, doesn't necessarily play on the outside a ton, but he's put up these enormous numbers.
And you think about somebody like Brandon Tate, who did some of the same things Switzer's done offensively and then also on special teams. If you stand Brandon Tate and Ryan Switzer next to each other and you have to pick one knowing nothing about them.
Yeah. I mean, Brandon was 6'1", I would think, maybe.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, I mean, and I think it's important to remember, Ryan Switzer was not a wide receiver in high school. I mean, he was just the guy they gave the ball to every play because he was so good at making the other team miss. I mean, he was mostly a running back in high school.
Kids love Ryan Switzer.
He has connected with Carolina fans, I think, more than any other Tar Heel football player that I can remember in the last 20 years. I mean, pick a number. I'm just thinking. And I don't even really – I can't even really think of one that's close because he's very active. He likes to be in the media some, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, he doesn't mind going out and being a spokesman for the program. He's very involved in the community. And I know this is going to sound silly, I think the fact that he's smaller plays a role too because people like the fact that he doesn't look like Hakeem Nicks. He isn't 6'3", 210 pounds. I mean, he's a smaller guy, and I think people like that.
Absolutely. I think that makes a big difference.
And he's got a great personality, as we'll find out here in a second.
Yes. We did an interview with Switzer and Joel Berry and Taylor Tracy from the volleyball team. They're all three of them together for the new Rams Club magazine. And it was – we didn't tell him what we were going to talk about, but I mean, Switzer nailed it on every one just in terms of like the overall Carolina experience and why it was important to him to get it all out of it. And he was talking about, as I think he'll probably talk about today, what it's like for him to realize that's coming to an end and he doesn't get to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. It obviously mattered to him. And it's not like this is a kid who grew up in Greensboro or something.
No.
And yet, despite coming from not knowing a whole lot about it other than his aunt went here, he's really immersed himself in it and people have really taken to him.
All right. Before we get to our Ryan Switzer interview, Adam, do you have any other pod topics you want to tackle before we chat with Ryan Switzer?
I think we should probably talk about your sunglasses.
Okay. I don't have many things that I care about. Like items.
No. It comes across wrong.
Yeah, I mean like physical items.
Right.
Like
tangible goods.
Right. Yeah. Like I'm not into collecting things. I don't care about car, like that kind of stuff. Like right. I just don't have anything like that really. So I had my sunglasses. Mm-hmm. I loved my sunglasses. They were like one of the very few things that I always like, oh, do I have my sunglasses? Where are my sunglasses? Is it all right? And they broke.
How'd they break?
You're really just doing this to get me fired up. They broke a couple weeks ago when I was in Disney World.
Yep.
As I was trying to unpop the double stroller. So you know how like you can fold up the stroller? So I was trying to unfold the stroller. Mm-hmm. And when I did it, somehow, like, I think I either had my sunglasses on my head or in my, like, kind of hung in my shirt collar. I think they were on my head. And they fell off, And I can't even remember now. I can't even remember if I dropped the stroller or if it popped open and landed, but somehow landed right on the sunglasses. And snapped them right at the bridge of the nose thing, about 90%. And of course, like 10 minutes later, they were done. So,
how'd that affect the rest of your day at Disney?
I would say it soured my mood. But in the Disney spirit, Adam.
Right. Of course.
I kept a positive face on.
Yeah, Mickey doesn't wear sunglasses.
That's right. And Mickey has a smile on his face.
That's right.
So, now here's where the story really turns to a big time negative.
That wasn't the big time negative when they were crushed by the double stroller?
So these were Maui Jim sunglasses.
Bill Walton loves Maui Jims.
Title sponsor of the Maui Invitational, in which the Tar Heels won the championship this year. Maui Jim, which I was unaware of. You can send in your Maui Jim sunglasses if they break, and they will, and you know more about this than me, so make sure I say this right. They will either replace them or fix them at some kind of discounted rate.
Big discount.
Yeah. So once you buy, they're not going to just send you another pair for free, but they will either fix the ones that you had, or they'll give you a new pair, a comparable pair, at a discounted rate. Big discount. Well, I was unaware of this fact. So I chose, once they totally broke in half, to demonstratively walk over to a trash can in Disney World and spike them into the trash can. So
it soured you a little, is what you said.
So a couple of days, or I don't even remember when, I know what day it occurred. I can't remember how long it was after we occurred. I was telling this story to William Henderson, who was did some analyst work for football this year. And we were at Duke, I remember, because I said something about the sunglasses he had on. And I was like, oh, those are nice sunglasses. I said, oh, I just lost. I said, look at this. I've got this gas station pair of sunglasses now. And so I was telling him the story, and he was like, but I didn't tell him I had thrown them away. And so I said they broke, and he was like, oh. He goes, well, when you send them in, when are you getting them back? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he said, they were Maui Jims, right? And I said, yeah. He goes, oh, yeah, you can send those in. They'll fix them for you. Dude. The only way that night could have gotten worse is if the Tar Heels blew a 14-0 lead and lost to a really not very good Duke team. So it was that was so disappointing to me. Almost as disappointing as the lime Skittles going away and being replaced by that garbage green apple. So now, as I wait to purchase a new nice pair of sunglasses, that has not occurred yet.
Maybe Santa will bring you some.
Maybe so. I have these two choices. Now, you obviously can't see them on the pod.
Well, here's what I think, though. I think you should post a picture on either Twitter or Instagram or whatever and let the pod people decide.
Okay. Yeah, I can do that.
I think that they would enjoy that, and they would give them some ownership in your sunglass choice.
Yep. That's a good idea.
For however long it might last.
All right. Now, but you need, okay, I'm going to show them to you right now.
Okay.
Pair number one.
I tell you what, Jen's going to be upset because she thought she was the one who told you about the Maui Jim.
She may have, but I think William Henderson told me
first. She and William Henderson look similar.
Yeah.
So you could easily get them confused.
I think maybe she definitely did tell me, but I think it was after, William Henderson had told me.
William Henderson, as per usual, clearing the way
that's right,
for other people to run right in behind him.
All right, number one.
Okay, number one.
These are a Fossil brand of sunglasses.
Okay. Fine maker of watches.
Yes. I feel like I got these as like a media gift for a bowl game or something.
Usually they have the bowl on there, but not in this case.
Not in this case.
Didn't Carolina play in something that was Fossil?
I don't know.
I think it might have been like a belt bowl had something to do with Fossil. That's usually my guess if Carolina played in it.
So these are fine. they're a little small. Like, okay, the lenses are a little small.
Right.
I kind of feel like, hold on, let me put them on.
Okay. If Ryan Switzer walks in right now, he's going to think we're awesome.
I kind of feel like they're a little small for my face, right?
Yeah.
And, like, they're a little too boxy. Like, the lenses are a little too boxy.
I got to tell you what bothers me about them.
Yeah.
The bolts on the lenses.
Yeah, they've got big bolts on the lenses.
I don't like
You know what I don't like? The nose bridge, it's like it's trying to do fake Oakley or something with that.
Yeah, it does kind of look like that. It looks like a Folkley.
Yeah. So that's number one.
Okay. So we loved those. Now let's try number two.
Well, here's the thing with number two.
Yeah.
Like a baby could have made these sunglasses.
What style should we make these? They said in the sunglass factory. And the other guy was like, oh, whatever.
I mean, these are like the cheapest pair of sunglasses possible, right? They're straight plastic. Like, I don't even know what the... Here, let's see if they can make a noise when I tap the lens. Hey, you hear that? I don't even know what that sound is.
It doesn't say what brand they are.
There is no brand to these. This brand is, I think it's known as generic sunglass.
They seem very floppy. Like the
Yeah, they're very loose.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Like, okay. So now, the plus of these is that they kind of wrap around to the side of my eyes, which I like.
Yeah.
But the problem is, I kind of feel like they look like Spider-Man eyes.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, right?
A little. Are either of these polarized for your eye protection?
These definitely are not.
Okay.
And, hold on, I got to take off my headset for a second. So okay.
I'll try not to run this ship off the ground.
All right, now they don't look right when I put them on top of my head. Don't they look weird? They look weird up there to me.
It doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me like the bolts on the other ones.
All right, so I guess that's a good idea. Here, I'll go ahead and take the picture right now of the two sunglasses.
Oh, you got to take the picture with them on.
Wait, I thought I was just taking a picture of the two sunglasses.
No, you can't pick out sunglasses until you see them on the person. So it needs to be like a side-by-side of you in number one and number two.
All right, hold on. I'll take these right now.
Wow, I didn't know you were going to take them on the pod. This is some interactive content. We need a good hashtag for the sunglasses.
Here, hold on. I'm going to take it right by the pod. Oh, look, now I've just got a picture of you. Hold on, let me turn it around. No one wants that, trust me. Oh, there we go. I just updated. Okay, here's number one. I'm just keeping
a serious
face.
Yeah, this is no joking around right here.
All right. I can't even keep a straight face with these on. All right, hold on. All right, good. All right, we got it. I just updated iOS 10, by the way.
Oh, so you can play checkers now.
Well, here's the thing. Everybody told me how much they disliked it when it came out.
Yeah.
I kind of like it.
It's fine.
Well, the only negative is it's really killed my battery today because, one, I had to, like, download it and install it. So that took, like, 20% of my battery to do all that. And I always think when you first do a new system, it just takes your phone a second to figure out how to adjust to the battery. Right?
Yeah, all the elves in there that have to do everything,
yeah,
they get all confused. Like, what is this new system?
All right, well, I'll have to find a way to creatively tweet these out so that people know what's happening.
You could put them on Instagram, Jones. I know you hate the Instagram.
I don't hate Instagram.
I think you kind of do.
I don't. I just don't use it as much. I don't think about it as
much. I don't
either.
You know who does use it? The kids.
Yeah. I just don't think about it as much. I guess I could suggest that people follow me on Instagram, and then that's where they can see the pictures for the pod.
The only reason I say that is because I think it's easier to put side-by-side pictures on Instagram. Or let me put it this way. I know how to do it on Instagram, but I don't know how to do it on Twitter.
Well, that's all you need. All right.
I think when Ryan Switzer comes in, we should each be wearing a set of sunglasses.
And get his opinion.
And just act totally normal. Like, hey, Ryan, how's it going?
I'll ask him what he thinks.
Yeah, we should.
I'll ask him. Okay. I guess it's time for Ryan Switzer. Unless you have any. Oh, do you have anything else? Because I do have one more thing.
I don't.
You know what show I saw the other night that I had forgotten that I love so much?
Oh, I do have two other things. What?
Night Court. Did you ever watch Night Court?
Yeah, I did, with the bald guy.
Bull. He was the bailiff.
Yeah. Bull the bailiff.
I love Night Court. I could watch Night Court on a loop.
What was the judge's name? Harry something?
Harry Stone.
Was that his real name or his on-the-show name?
That was his on-the-show name, but his name was Harry something else in real life.
Yeah, it was.
Was he one of that cartoonist guy?
I don't know. It was a funny show, though.
It's a great show. You got Mac, who was like the court reporter.
Where did you see Night Court?
It was on some random channel, like when I was flipping through TV channels. And it was like five of them in a row. And I was like, oh, man, I wish I could watch all of these right now.
Well, you can't talk about Night Court without us sending our condolences to the family of Alan Thicke.
That was...
He seemed like a nice guy, and I really like Growing Pains. I watched it every week.
Yeah, and it happened while he was with his kid, right?
Playing hockey.
That's terrible.
Well, you know what else makes you realize is that he was 69 years old.
Yeah.
And there was a time where I would have thought, oh, he was old. But now I think he was only like middle age.
Yeah, I know.
Because I'm suspiciously close to that age.
I know.
Mm. But that was terrible.
Thanks for bringing me down.
Well, Adam. I mean, Night Court and Growing Pains are same.
Yeah,
era.
Same.
Did you watch Growing Pains?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, me too. I love that theme song. And here's my one other thing. I don't remember how this happened. Somebody sent me a link to the pod on iTunes or something, and I noticed that it had been rated.
Mm. How are we rating?
5 stars.
Yeah, that means there's like one person who put now, 5 stars on there?
There were several people.
Oh,
and
that's good.
What they said was so nice. Oh. And so that made me think, like you said, somebody came up to you at the Coach Williams radio show this week, and I had somebody come up to me at the game. It's nice when, first of all, to realize that anyone listens other than our families. And second of
which,
all.
Which mine, I think, are out at this point. Right? Like, we hear him enough.
But we appreciate that. I mean, that it's nice that people like it and that think that they have fun listening to it. And so we appreciate it when they take the time to say that or to rate it or to send us a tweet or an email or whatever.
Yeah, thank you very much. And we know that part of the reason that you hopefully like the pod is some great guests. And we have one coming up as we are going to chat with Tar Heel wide receiver Ryan Switzer. Man, we're excited to have with us the all-time leading receiver in Carolina football history. Does that wig you out to hear that?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. That was pretty sweet. Appreciate that.
Ryan Switzer, of course, has more catches than any Tar Heel ever. He only needs a handful of yards to have more yards than any Tar Heel receiver ever coming up, and he'll have that opportunity in the Sun Bowl, of course. And we know he's still one punt return touchdown away from tying that NCAA record. You and I have talked about this before. You've had – how many of you had called back in your career? 3 touchdowns, punt returns?
Four.
Is that going to, like, if you don't get it, are you just going to just live the rest of your life knowing that really you did, even though it didn't count?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, obviously I want it to stand, but if it doesn't happen, I got it in my books. So
in the Switzer record books, it counts.
That's right.
What's going on? Tell us a little bit about, after the season ended, now before you guys got the bowl game coming up, just what's shaking.
Yeah, you know, obviously the last couple of days and week I've been finishing up school and finals. I'm completely done now, so graduating here Sunday. But, you know, us as a team, we've had a couple of weeks off. We've practiced here and then, but we've been working out consistently, whether it be in the weight room or conditioning on the field. And, you know, for me, it's been about continuing to stay fresh, continuing to prep myself, because obviously, you know, I've got want to perform well in the bowl game, and then right after the bowl game, at least for me, is, you know, a whole slate of football. So I've got to make sure that I stay on top of everything physically.
Is it hard to stay motivated for the bowl game? I mean, just because I know you guys didn't end the season the way you wanted. You came up just a little short on some big goals that you guys had in reach there at the end. Is it hard to be motivated for this game?
No, I think I can speak for the guys on our team. Anytime you get a chance to go out and play the game that you love, especially against a team like Stanford, you know, we lucked out with you know, going to Texas and playing a team like that, because, you know, other ACC teams are, you know, playing unranked teams, and, you know, the atmosphere may not be what it is, but we know we've got a playoff caliber team and you know, playoff caliber players that we're playing. So, me personally, it's not any trouble. And I think I can speak for the rest of our team on that, especially with how I've seen, you know, us prepare, whether it be in the weight room or on the practice field the last couple of days.
People always talk about how the bowl game's supposed to be a reward for the players. From a player's perspective, what makes for a good bowl game?
that's a good question. If you asked for the coaches, it'd be a win.
Right.
For us, obviously – my freshman year when we won the Belk Bowl, that feeling was a lot sweeter than the last 2 years, and in the season and a loss. So, you know, for me, it's going to be about getting some downtime in a city I've never been to.
Don't go to El Paso a bunch?
Nope. Yeah, that's not on my regular schedule. But it'll be about getting some downtime, enjoying the last couple of days that I've got with my teammates, the people around me, and ultimately getting the win and ending, you know, not just my career, but, you know, ending the season on a right note, because that gives you a little bit of momentum heading into next year.
What do you think went wrong in those last couple games against Duke and State?
Oh, man. You know, we just, for whatever reason, we just, you know, Duke, we started fast, couldn't finish, and then State, we started slow and finished fast. We just couldn't put two and two together. Obviously, they took advantage of some things that we didn't do well. State is still a head scratcher for me, honestly, and I guess you could put both games as head scratchers. Mm-hmm. You know, with NC State, we knew going into that week that their defense was their strong suit. We knew that they weren't losing games because of their defense. Obviously, they had great showings against everyone they played. I mean, they go into Clemson and hold them to 17. Mm-hmm. You know, in regular play. So, we just as an offense, we had some penalties. We got behind the chains against them. I do remember that. And when you get behind the chains against a team that's got eight guys that they rotate in on that D line, and they can bring pressure, it's tough. So. That was a big issue for us, and against Duke, I don't know. I promise you, Jones, I don't know what happened. You know, it wasn't a matter of being fired up to play. It wasn't a matter of effort. It just, for whatever reason, didn't happen. And obviously, both of those suck. But I think the Duke one hurts. You know, at least for me, a lot more.
Yeah.
Why so?
Because one, they're not going to a bowl. I mean, I'm going to keep it real. I'm never going to play them again, so yeah. It's whatever. They're not going to a bowl game. We had more talent. We had, I mean, more everything, you know, just across. I mean, on paper, obviously, and that's why you don't play the game on paper. That's why you play the game. And their coaches had a great game plan for us, and they convinced their kids that, you know, they could win, and they. You know, could compete with us. And when we got up 14-0 and 21-7, they still fought. So you got to give a lot of credit to them. But I think the fact that, you know, they had as poor a season as they did, and we took a loss to them,
sure.
It makes it hurt more.
Talking to Ryan Switzer here on the Carolina Insider podcast. Ryan, you met your now fiance, here at Carolina, right?
Yep.
How did that relationship begin, and how did it get to the point that she was able to tie down somebody like Ryan Switzer?
Oh, don't let her hear you say that. She'll be upset. Yeah, you know, we just obviously met through campus, and you know, I met her, and we didn't talk for a couple of months. It really didn't amount to anything, and then it was actually a class that I had in Woolen Gym, and I was walking out of class, and she happened to walk into class in the same area, and I was kind of like, oh, hey, like, yeah, you know, remember me, blah, 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 and, you know, we exchanged contact information and hung out a handful of times, and didn't expect anything like this to happen. You know, we were just hanging out, and you know, going on a couple of dates here and then it kind of hit me out of nowhere that this may be the person that, you know, I could potentially see myself with. And, you know, as our relationship grew and, you know, she passed all the tests. She came to the spring game, actually going into my junior year in Charlotte when we had the game in Charlotte. And I had a plethora of aunts, uncles, cousins, and that was the first time her meeting everybody, and she handled it like a champ, and that's when I knew that, yeah, she might be able to be a Switzer. So she's been great. she's been really supportive of me. She understands the time commitments that I have and the things that I have to do on a daily basis, but Yeah, she's been awesome.
Who knew the spring game in Charlotte, Adam, would have such an impact?
That was an excellent use of the word plethora.
Yeah, no doubt. Big words.
Obviously, there have been several important relationships you've had here at Carolina. There's that one. And then there's one that maybe will get a little less attention later in your life. But Gunnar Brewer, wherever he goes, there seem to be good receivers. What is it about him that makes him so good at coaching wide receivers?
Man, the first thing that comes to mind when you talk about Coach Brew, he's just is how genuine he is. And I definitely saw that in my recruiting process, and I think everyone that he recruits sees that. You know, it goes beyond football with him, and you know, for me and my story and my journey, it was about him not giving up on me, because I didn't come in the most seasoned receiver by any means. I mean, I played running back my whole life. I had no idea any route concepts, what defenses were. I mean, I was very raw, and a lot of that was covered up because of the success that I had on special teams. So Coach Brewer continued to, you know, it would have been easy for him to toss me aside and just allow me to be, you know, be on special teams and not not allow me to get reps on offense. But he continued to work with me, whether it be before or after practice, and he continued to coach me up. And he's still coaching me, you know, to this day in the couple of days leading up to the bowl game. So, he's very genuine. He's a guy that means what he says. And, you know, for me, he's been someone who hasn't, you know, given up on me since I've been here.
Of course, the next step is for you is the NFL. What does that bring up in you when you think about that, about playing in the NFL? I mean, I have to assume that's been something that you've dreamed about for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, I've never wanted to do anything else. Your teachers always ask you, you've always got these assignments when you're younger about what do you want to do, who do you want to be? And it was always, I want to be in the NFL. And, you know, everyone says that, obviously.
Sure.
But, you know, for me, it's been something that I've always, you know, truly, truly meant and truly wanted to do. So, it's been more of a goal, to be honest, than a dream, because I've always felt like it's been a reality. And now that it's here, it's just, it's pretty cool. You know, obviously this isn't, you know, the end of it. But there's something with me. I get when you say that and you say, you know, everything you've ever worked for is right here. You think there would be a little bit of, satisfactory. You think there would be a little bit of that, but there hasn't been. And it's been interesting for me to be able to kind of step back and realize that maybe this isn't all that I want. Maybe I want to continue to do greater things. And, you know, whether it be play 10 years or have this, you know, many receptions, yards, blah, blah, blah. So I've been a little bit more level-headed than I expected, and I think that's just, you know, credited to wanting to do more and be more.
Hmm.
You mentioned you've always kind of felt like it would be a reality, but I'm guessing you've probably had a lot of people tell you, come on, Ryan, let's be a little more realistic than what you're being. Why did you continue to feel like this was something you could legitimately do, even when I'm guessing there were a lot of people saying, come on.
I had a very supportive circle. And, you know, I credit that to my parents. My parents always instilled in me a belief in myself that I really could make this happen. You know, my dad obviously is self-employed and is a photographer and you know, works on his own. And then my mom went back with four kids and got her degree for teaching. Yeah. So hard work has always been in my genes and in my family. And they really did. I mean, it was hammered into me at a very young age that, you know, hard work doesn't always give you it doesn't always, you know, mean success, but it gives you a great chance. And whether it be my parents or, you know, I've got a special relationship with a guy, Matt Downey, who has worked me out and trained me since I was in seventh grade. who played college ball and always, you know, was supportive of me. And, I've had a lot of people, and I still have a lot of people that tell me I can't do what I do and this and that. But I have so much belief in myself and in the talents that I've been given. And, you know, at the end of the day, if, you know, I'm the guy that if I don't have the answer, I'll tell you I don't have it, but I'll go get it. And I'm the type of guy that, you know, if someone's just as talented as me or a little bit more talented as me, I know that he's not going to, you know, work as hard as me or do the things that I'm willing to do. So I'm very confident in that.
Now, earlier this week, you mentioned your desire to play for the Carolina basketball team for a for a game or two. I believe you said you could you feel good about your defense and you could give them a timely bucket or two if needed.
Yeah.
I brought this to Coach Williams on his radio show on Monday, and he said he would take that little rascal in talking about you in a heartbeat. So you got that's high compliment now for Rory Williams. You get a rascal involved.
Okay.
In there.
Okay.
That's a good thing. So I need to know a little bit more about Ryan Switzer, the basketball player, if we're going to see him out on the court anytime soon.
Oh, I mean, how long you got?
There's no time limit.
I could
Ryan.
Go on for days. Oh, man. I remember him calling me a little rascal my freshman year. I guess no matter how old I get, I'm just going to always be his little rascal.
Oh, yeah. Tough little nut, little rascal.
Yeah.
These are complimentary terms.
Well, you know, I have to start off saying that I won a state championship as a starting point guard.
There you go.
My sophomore year.
There you go. You're a winner.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm a proven winner. I have countless AAU championships, middle school championships, you know, can't runner up my junior year in high school, but, just pull up the film. That's all. I mean,
that's all you need.
The eye in the sky doesn't lie.
That's right.
Coach Williams loves it when people say that.
Yeah, it really doesn't. You know, and AAU, I wasn't the biggest or, you know, I didn't have the best jump shot, but, you know, I was a hustler and I was the guy that our team would put on the best offensive guy because I was very quick in short spaces.
Yep.
So it made it difficult, you know, for the opposing player. And then, I didn't need to be wide open for a three, but I needed to be pretty open.
Right. You need to have a little space.
Yeah. If I had a little space, it was going to be knocked down. Absolutely. But I could get in the paint. I could penetrate, you know, zones, and I could kick it out to my shooter. So there's really, I mean,
what can't you do? Really?
Exactly. So you know, Carolina right now, they don't need any more scores. They've got scores, but you know, I think you know I could contribute.
Yeah.
You know,
you could be Julius Peppers part two, man.
Yeah, maybe you know maybe a 2 or 3 minutes here or there.
That's all we
know.
Need.
That's all I'm saying.
I bet you were incredibly annoying.
Oh, absolutely.
In a good way.
To the other team.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would pick up the guy at three-quarter court. Yeah. And
nice.
Oh, yeah. My goal was 10 seconds, try to get 10 seconds each time. And also, I used basketball when I was in high school. I used basketball as another form of working out.
Sure.
And another form of getting my short area quickness refined. I tried to get up and down his court as much as I could, be in the best shape I could. So that was always in the back of my head as well.
How much trash talking goes on in a typical college football game?
Oh, man.
Just when Adam asked, was talking about you being annoying, that just made me think about that.
Yeah, you know, for me, I'm the wrong person to trash talk to be honest. And it's not the fact that I verbally respond, but I'm a competitor and it gets me going. This year, there really wasn't a lot. I thought there was going to be some down in Tallahassee. There really wasn't. Even with NC State, I was expecting a couple jawing matches. There was no talking, which was very, very surprising. But, you know, there's some here and there. But I think for the majority of the time, people and at least guys that are there for the right reasons are out there to handle their business. And with us being a high-tempoed offense, and with me playing the position I do, I got to run back and forth anyway. So half the times I'm out of breath. I got to get ready for the next play. I don't have time to sit there and talk to this dude.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
In just a couple seconds.
That's exactly how it is.
I think returning a punt is one of the most taken-for-granted things in football because, you know, those of us who don't play all watch it. We think, oh, well, he'll catch that, of course. When in reality, like, if I go out there, I'd miss 100% of them. What is it like at that moment when the ball's in the air and you're looking up, but you know there's 11 guys coming down the field and their sole purpose is to somehow get themselves on the highlights for making a big hit on you? Do you hear what's going on? Do you see? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you mention that, because when I watch games or I watch NFL and college games, that's exactly what they do. They take that play for granted. In the meantime, I'm sitting there and I'm kind of biting my nails because I don't know if this dude's going to catch it or not. But it's not easy by any means. For me, when the ball's kicked, first of all, I know going into the game who their best cover guys are, whether they have two or three of them, one of them. I know where those guys are and where they line up. So those are the first guys that I'm taking a peek at when the ball snapped to see if my guy got a good hit, a good jam on him, or right. if they got a free release. So after I take that quick peek, I look at the punter and I see how the ball comes off his foot. I see it in the air. I take one more peek usually to see, and a lot of guys don't do that. I take one more peek to see how much space that I have, because I practice that. I practice sure. it in practice, and it takes a lot of reps to get good at that. So that's helped me obviously make better decisions this year. But, once you take that second peek, you got to get your eyes back on the ball quick. And usually by that time, you know whether you have room or not. But it is, yeah, I mean, it's you know, Coach Fedora tell you, it's one of the most, you know, like you said, taken for granted plays. But I believe it takes a special type of person to play that position.
Somebody who would pick up three-quarter court on the
Somebody who would pick
court.
Up three-quarter court.
Also someone who is handsome and intelligent.
Yeah, that's right.
I have another question, then I got to get to a really important topic after that. But first, you had that play this year. I don't remember who it was against. Maybe James Madison. Where you fake, like, the fair catch, and then you ran it after that. And then twice after that, dudes took like a cheap shot at you, right?
Yeah.
I think once was maybe Florida State. That might be wrong, but I feel like I do remember it happening twice after that play. Do you think that was as a result of you doing that against James Madison?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I knew that's why I didn't get upset or anything like that. I brought that upon myself. Now, granted, I thought I gave pretty, you know.
Oh, you did.
Decent,
the two times that you got
hit. Yeah, fair catch, signals, but yeah. Coach Fedora was not very happy with me after the James Madison one. you know, it was kind of a spur of the moment type thing, and you sure. know, just roll with it, see what happens. But yeah, it cost me, you know, down the road.
All right, now Adam and I talked about this on the podcast before you joined us today. My sunglasses. I had a really nice pair of Maui Jim sunglasses that I loved. Right, I'd had them for a long time. I just was down in Disney World a couple of weeks ago with my kids, and they broke. Like, they fell off.
Not the kids broke.
No, my sunglasses. So I had them on top of my head. I, like, leaned over. They fell. Then the stroller fell on the sunglasses and broke them, right?
It's a shame.
Yeah, I know. And so I was unaware that you can send in Maui Jims. And I think you can do this with Oakleys, too, I think. Not that I have Oakleys. And they'll fix them for you at, like, a discounted rate, okay? Now, this is all doesn't matter because I angrily threw them in the trash can in Disney World. So now I have these two garbage pair of sunglasses that were just like my backup ones, you know?
Yeah.
So I've got the backup ones until I get a new pair of sunglasses. And so what we're doing is we're letting the podcast listeners vote on which sunglasses that I should wear until I get the new ones. So I am wondering, can I put both of these on and get your opinion on them both?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I feel like this is going to skew the pod listeners.
All right, now,
I mean, how could you go against Ryan Switzer?
I don't like either one of these.
They're both right. ugly. Let's start with that.
Yeah, neither one of them is attractive.
Okay.
All right, so this is pair number one. I kind of feel like these are too small. I think I got these in like a Belk Bowl like media gift or something one time.
Okay.
All right.
I'm taking mental snapshots.
So we got this thing in the middle I don't really like. Adam doesn't like the bolts there on the lenses. You see what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
See, I'm not a sunglass wearer, but I can, you know, obviously it's very common.
Now, these are about the cheapest. I mean, just look, you can just look at them right there and see they're cheap, right? All right. Now, I kind of feel like these are
no shot. No, no shot. It's got to be the first pair.
Man, I didn't even have them on.
No, it's got to be the first pair.
Man,
you're like
a quick
Cruella DeVille.
That was like a punt return decision right there, man. He didn't need a seat. He didn't even need the second peak.
You didn't even have him fully on.
Yeah, I know. You're ready. Okay. Well, Ryan Switzer has spoken.
Yeah, put Ryan down for number one.
Yeah, I think he's on number one.
I wouldn't say he loved number one. He more voted against two.
That's pretty much what it comes down to. Yeah. Is you just pick the lesser of the two evils in this regard. you joined us on the radio show a couple of times, and people love it when Ryan Switzer's on the radio show. Like, I think they all just want to like hug Ryan when he leaves because they loved hearing from him and seeing him so much. On the last show of the year, you joined us, as you remember, just a couple weeks ago, and you and Larry Fedora had a pretty nice, like, genuine moment of like, hey, this guy was not only my football coach, but this guy's meant a lot to me, and I think he said some very nice things about you as well. I just be interested in what that relationship is like, because I think, you know, a head coach player relationship is different for every guy. I think for you, what is that like, and do you think that he will be someone that you continue to keep in contact with to be a part of your life after you leave Chapel Hill?
Yeah, you know, he's been the most influential person that I've had in Chapel Hill these past 4 years, without a doubt. You know, along with Coach Brewer, he's someone who really never flinched with me. He never doubted what I could do, and never gave up on the player that he thought I could be. He's always had an open door policy with me. You know, it's never been where he's been too busy, or, you know, if I needed him, he's come out of a staff meeting. I've asked him for a lot of off-field advice, which he's given. You know, he's just been, like you said, he's been more than a head coach. I mean, we've got a relationship to where, I mean, he can yell and he can get on me, and I can, you know that he's just trying to get me better. It's never personal with him. And it's allowed me to grow as a player, and it's allowed me to grow as a person. There's been some personal things that I've dealt with since I've been here, and he's, you know, helped me see it through. He's you know, most definitely someone who, you know, I'll always confide in, who I'll always trust his opinion, because he's always, you know, shot me in the right direction. You know, when I was considering declaring for the draft last year, I was curious to see how he would handle that and what our talks would be like, because we had numerous discussions about it. But he was always, you know, he never leaned, you know, pushed me one way or the other. He was always, you know, neutral. He wanted, you know, I remember him clearly stating that he doesn't know what was best for me. He said only I could know that, but that he was going to be there if I had questions, if I needed answers. He was going to go get him. He reached out to certain people for more information on me, and which allowed me to help make my decision. So, yeah, he's been a head coach and a lot more to me and a lot of the guys on our team, and I've really, really enjoyed playing for him. I mean, I've had so many influential people in my life, and I've had some great high school coaches great coaches. I have a great high school coach who I have a great relationship with to this day. And, you know, I've just been blessed with great, you know, adult supporting cast, you know, throughout my career.
What did you take from those conversations with Coach Fedora last year and the process you had to go through that's helped you talk to Mitch this year?
You know, Mitch has a few less things to work on than I did last year. And he's got a little bit less to prove. So I think the biggest thing that I've been able, you know, when Mitch has asked me, or if me and Mitch have talked, because Mitch hasn't opened up about it a lot, to be honest with you. I think, you know, he's purposely done that just to try to keep the attention and stuff, you know, off of him. But when I've told Mitch, you got to do what makes you happy, you got to do what's best for you and obviously best for your family. And that's cliche to say, but it really is true. I mean, you know, he's in a position that I wasn't in last year, you know, pretty much being a surefire first rounder. So, you know, I'm sure the talks with him and Coach Fedora are pretty similar, you know, to ours. And I know for a fact, you know, Coach Fedora is not pressing him to stay. I know he's not feeding him anything to convince him to come back. I know he's telling him to do what's best for him, and I'm sure he's giving him all the best information that, you know, Coach Fedora has, and he's feeding that to Mitch, and ultimately it's going to be up to Mitch to make, you know, the right decision for him.
We're in this streak where I'm interviewing you every day until you graduate. We did an interview yesterday for the new Rams Club magazine, and that had some other student athletes in it, and they were talking about their favorite Carolina memory. And Taylor Tracy, the volleyball player, was talking about the Geo game because she was a redshirt freshman when that game happened. What's it like for you to know that you're that memory for a lot of people out there, not that were in that room, but there's kids somewhere who think, well, I remember when Ryan Switzer did that. What's that like for you?
It's it's special because I was that kid. I mean, I was that kid when I was younger. My father would, I mean, there was very few Mountaineer home games that we missed. I mean, yeah. Obviously growing up in the state of West Virginia, the Mountaineers were it. And, you know, I idolized those players. I idolized NFL players. And, you know, when West Virginia lost or, you know, growing up, my favorite team was the Minnesota Vikings. My dad's still a Vikings fan to this day. When I still remember them getting knocked out of the playoffs with a loss to Arizona, and it ruined the rest of my week. And when West Virginia lost to Pitt, yep. Supposed to play in the national championship, I think I cried for a month straight. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, so I was very much involved. And to kind of, I think that's why I appreciate it a little bit more than maybe the average folk does, because when I come out from games and I see those kids, and whether it be in public, whether I, you know, I get asked for, you know, pictures or autographs, you know, sometimes it can be overbearing, but, you know, my dad always tells to whom much is given, much is respect, much is required. And, you know, I got to realize I'm very fortunate. And I see myself in those kids because I used to be that little kid who all he wanted was a picture or an autograph, and it would completely make his year. So it's very humbling to be in the position I'm in, and to kind of live life from the other, you know, the other side, and yeah. I get to see it from, you know, the player side instead of the child side.
We've kept you a long time, so we don't want to. I mean, I know you'd spend all afternoon here hanging out.
I had two workouts today. I got a date with Gabby tonight, but other than that, I'm chilling.
Just tell her to come over.
Yeah.
We had Marcus Page's fiance sitting here with him.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You were talking about, Adam mentioned the Geo play, which made me think of this. Do you have a favorite play? I mean, one that you look back on and you're like, wow, what is it?
It was actually recent. It was the Pitt game. Uh-huh. It was fourth and seven, fourth
yep,
and eight,
fourth and
something
seven.
Like that. It was the last fourth down, actually. And we had a crossing route called, and Mitch got blitzed. Elijah, I just watched all of our offensive clips today, so it's fresh in my mind. Elijah picked up the backer blitz, the weak side backer blitz, picked it up, gave Mitch just amount of time. I was actually I broke off the route, you can see as I'm supposed to run across the field and cross the under Sam over Mike is the rule, but there was no one in the middle of the field except one dude, and I could tell he was about to wall me. So if I crossed him, I felt like I was going to get jammed up, which is legal in college. I felt like I was going to get jammed up, and Mitch was going to have nowhere to go. So as soon as I started running towards him, I saw he was going to wall me. So I looked at, you can see it on the film on the back view. It's beautiful. It's by far my favorite play because it was impromptu. I looked at Mitch and I stopped on a dime. The guy twists his ankle just a little bit, and as soon as I looked at Mitch, it was like Mitch knew exactly what I was gonna do.
That's wild.
And instead of throwing, you know, like many people would, just throw it where the receiver's supposed to be. Mitch, I mean, we had a connection there, dude. Like we were eye to eye on that one.
It's
and
like you and Gabby that time outside the classroom.
That's exactly right. We were eye to eye, and he put it up and away from the defender. I mean, it was. Yeah, I mean, looking back on it, I still get chills from that play, and I think it's more than that, just because it's a product of how many times me and Mitch have thrown over the years, mm-hmm. How many, you know, repetitions we've got. when people aren't looking, and all of that, yep. for one play, it has been worth it.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, and I just think it's wild how Ryan would view that play compared to how you and I, and you, I mean, and you and I cover football some. I mean, and how we would view that play and how somebody else would view that play.
Well, and the speed at which he's talking about making the decisions.
Right.
It took him longer to describe that than it did to do it.
Oh, yeah.
No yeah. Oh, 100%. 100%.
And if you or I were out there and that guy was standing in front of us, we'd go, oh, crap, and just kind of lay down on the ground and it'd be over. And to have the ability to not just see what's going to happen but see what is going to happen, I think that's what separates guys like that from normal people.
Talking to Ryan Switzer here on the Carolina Insider podcast, and we appreciate Ryan giving us, a long time here this afternoon as – of course, his Carolina career coming to an end, and it, you know, you do have one more game left. Do you start to think about, man, I wonder how people are going to remember Ryan Switzer when I'm gone? I mean, has that thought ever come to your mind?
Only because my father reminds me of it all
constantly,
the time. I mean, he's always telling me to be gracious. He's just always reminding me. Who's, you know, people are always watching this and that. So he reminds me about, you know, what I've done, and because I'm not the one to usually get satisfied, as we talked about earlier. So my dad is kind of that role where he tries to, you know, keep me on the ground and try to help me enjoy what I've been able to do. But yeah, I mean, 100%. You know, I think, you know, this university has meant, and the people have meant as much to me as I have to them. And, you know, it's been a two-way relationship, you know, 100%. And I think the older I get, and certainly when my playing days are over, I'll be able to look back a little bit more and see everything that I've done. It kind of sounds crazy to reflect as a 22-year-old, you know, but – yeah, I mean, my time's running out. I've got one more game, and man, has it really flown by. I mean,
I know.
Seriously, it's gone by fast.
There was the picture that made the rounds this year, and I can't remember his name now, but it was somebody from Florida State, and he sat down and ate lunch with the kid in the lunchroom. Did you see that? Who was he?
Travis Rudolph. That's correct.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
You would probably know since you actually played on the same field as him, whereas I watched on television. You've got a history of doing similar things to that. Why is it important? Why do you think it's important for you or for any athlete to get outside of their group, which it's easy to just hang out in the group of people like you, and get experience outside of that?
Well, one, athletes have a very wide following. They've got a great following and a lot of people that look up to them. So a lot of, you know, the majority of people idolize these guys and see what they do, and it starts to impact them and have an impact on what they do. So, yeah, you know, that was a great thing that Travis did, obviously, and it touched a lot of people, and it obviously touched that kid's heart. So, you know, for me, my relationships with the kids that I had back home, and especially Clifton, haven't, you know, mm-hmm. been publicized much, which is, you know, completely fine. It's not why I've done that, you know, since I've been in middle school. I didn't have this elaborate plan to
the long play
to get to know these kids and to have form relationships with them to, you know, have it, you'll be on my record down the road. You know, I did it because one I was very humbled by these kids and how, when I took the time to get to know them, how sweet and genuine they actually were. Especially Clifton. He's been someone who has, you know, touched my life so many ways, and you know, I can't even begin to describe, you know, how much he means to me, and the things that he's done for me, you know, don't even compare to what I've been able to give him and do for him. So, it you know, it's important for athletes, not only with these kids, but in all facets of life, to set good examples, and do the right thing, because they are looked at, you know, I mean, it's just they're in the spotlight a lot more. It's just how it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're on TV all the time, you know, with the social media following, you know, people are always watching. So, you know, Travis set a great example. I was really happy to see that. You know, it warmed my heart. And obviously, I hope that you know, things like that can continue to happen. Because when you sit down and look at it, and if you actually talk about the special education and kids like that, they are just normal people. I mean,
sure.
When, you know, cut and dry, they're just a little bit different, like we all are. But, you know, I joke about it all the time to my family and friends and people who are close with Clifton, I'm pretty sure that Clifton sees me about like I see him. I mean, he sees me as different. And in his head, he's normal. And, you know, in my head, I'm normal and he's different. So,
sure.
You know, it's that's just how it is. And but, yeah, I'm glad you asked that because it's, you know, that's something that holds dear to my heart and something that, you know, I look forward to getting involved with down the road, too.
Go ahead, Don.
Is it kind of nice to have those relationships that you know have nothing to do with how many touchdowns you score? Because don't you always kind of have to be on guard? Like, does this person like me because I'm Ryan Switzer? Like, Clifton likes you because you're Ryan Switzer, not because you're number three or you returned a punt or whatever. That's got to be kind of nice.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, being in the spotlight, you've always got to keep your circle small, and you've got to have a good read of character. But for someone like Clifton, there, you know, who he loves me because of my, you know, he just who I am. He loves me because of my face. As soon as he sees me, he doesn't see a number, he doesn't see a play. I mean, he just sees a person. And you know, I see that, and I sense that with a lot of, you know, some of the people that are in my major circle, especially Gabby. You know, I just, you know, she just is here for me because of me and not because of what I've done. It's nice to know that you've got people like that in your life, because you're not always going to be on top. I know I'm not always going to be at the top of my game, and I'm going to have off days, and I'm going to have days where some people may hate me because I mess up on a Saturday or Sunday. And you need those people in your life to pick you back up and be in your corner when things aren't going well.
Last thing, excuse me, last thing. You mentioned social media, and you just talked about kind of people if you mess up. Is it different now, you think, with the access that people can have to somebody like you and the fact that they can send you a message directly to you that you may or may not see, but it's a much better chance of you seeing it than 30 years ago when this was not even available. Is that... just what is that like? How much attention do you pay to that stuff? And how big of a challenge is that to kind of not listen to all that negativity or maybe even some of the over-the-top adoration that you may get?
Yeah, I mean, it goes both ways. You've got to be careful of those who are praising you, and you've got to be even more careful of those who are you know, spitting at you or throwing shade. For me, you know, I don't see a lot of it, but I see a good majority of it, whether it be from opposing fans or people who, you know, whether they thought I should have did something different because they're sitting at home watching it.
Sure.
So, you know, my strategy is I'm a big blocker. I just block,
sure.
You know, and obviously I'm not going to be able to block, you know, all these people down the road, and hopefully I don't mess up enough to where, but sometimes people just don't, you know, they just don't like you. Sometimes
yeah.
They just want to be hateful and say mean things. And, you know, those are the people that you got to look out for and just realize that they're not worth your time and to cut them off right away. And then there's sometimes when it's comical, what some people say, and you see something and you immediately have like a rapid like response,
right.
Like, oh, this is going to be good. Like,
right.
I'm about to flame this dude. but you have to have a healthy balance of that. And, you know, I do a much better job of it than my parents do. My parents take everything
hard.
To heart.
How could
I mean,
they, not?
They yeah. You know, my parents, and I've, you know, I gotta sit down and have a talk with them because I'm about to get heavily. I mean, this is going to be the most criticized year of my life coming up with, you know, everyone studying film, this and that. So my parents are going to go through the roof. But yeah, they've got to do a better job of that. But for me, it's just been about focusing on people that matter. Not dealing with knuckleheads and having fun with it when it's appropriate.
Sure.
I'm picturing Mel Kiper picking up the phone. Mel, this is Michael Switzer. You said a couple things that are totally wrong.
My mom would call him. So, Mr. Kiper.
when that area, when that specific area code comes up.
304 comes up, it's Ashley Switzer.
Joan said last thing, but I got to ask you one other thing. How do you think you're leaving Carolina football as a program as compared to how it was when you got here? And what's the next step for Carolina football?
It doesn't compare. I mean, the difference is phenomenal. I came into a program that was it was in between. I mean, it was some with Coach Fedor and them just getting here, and the former players that were here. It was just a bad mix. Mm-hmm. I mean, for whatever reason, the two sides just really didn't get along. Whether it was those players didn't trust the staff, which is not, you know, it's always a bad thing. I mean, if a new guy comes in and a guy you've never met who didn't recruit you personally, because recruiting takes about a year and a half, 2 years, so you get to know somebody pretty well. And it just didn't click. And there was a lot of animosity and a lot of anger and just a lot of distrust on, you know, on both ends, coaches and players. And now we have a solid foundation. Coach Fedor and his staff have done a great job of recruiting high character guys who love the game of football. I think that's most important. You get guys who, because it's hard and it's not for everybody. I mean, college football is tough and the NFL is tough and it requires a lot of time, especially being a full-time student. Your body hurts a lot of times. Sometimes you wake up in the morning, you feel like you're 60 and not 20. I mean,
I feel like I'm 60 all the time, even though I didn't play football.
Yeah, it's definitely not for everybody. So you've got to recruit guys that genuinely love the game. And now I believe that the seniors and I are leaving this program much better than we found it. I mean, I said the foundation is solid. We've got if Coach Fedor stays, you know, and, you know, does what Coach Williams has done. You know, if he stays, continues to build this program, I mean, he's going to go down as one of the best, you know, coaches in Carolina history and you know, possibly college football, because I think it's just going to continue to go up. Yeah, we had some slip-ups this year, but like we talked about as a program, the fact that when I got here, there was no talk of an ACC championship, nothing like that. The fact that there's disappointment and hurt and a feeling of failure towards not reaching our goal of playing in the ACC championship is you know, it sucks that we obviously didn't get there, but it's a great feeling to know that there's a feeling of failure because we didn't reach the, you know, the pinnacle of the ACC. So it just means that the program's on its way up. Like I said, it's in great hands. It's, you know, the facilities are continuing to get better, and I'm excited, you know, to see down the road the talent that comes in. I'm excited to see. We do have to schedule. We got to get some bigger games in Keenan.
Yep.
I will say that. We've got to bring some top tier. I mean, next year Louisville and Notre Dame are coming, but there's got to be a continued effort to get teams, whether it be like the Ohio States, or it's got to be some non-conference scheduling, or even getting Florida State, something like that, Clemson to come here. That would, I think, take our program to the next level.
Now, some of that, of course, is ACC. Carolina just signed a deal with TCU for a home-and-home. Of course, they've got the home-and-home in California coming up as well. So getting to that point to answer your, or to speak to that, but certainly a good point. You look like you have something else to say. Do you have something else to say?
No, I was just going to say, if people couldn't love Ryan Switzer anymore, he wants them to get better games in Keenan. That's what people always talk about.
I know. Yeah, well, it makes sense. Ryan, you should just come host the podcast, man. We don't even need to do this.
I mean, I think I have a future in
it. I do, too. You know? When you're done playing.
You realize you can't do everything. You can't set all the records in football, play on the basketball team, and do the pod.
Why not?
You've got to pick one or two.
Sunglasses. So he can critique sunglasses.
I mean, people like us have got to have a job doing something. You can't leave something for the rest of us.
I can't be selfish.
Leave a little morsel.
I understand that.
Ryan, appreciate your time, man.
Always.
I'm nearly an hour here today, so thank you so much. And, gosh, it's been a pleasure covering you and watching you play. And I know I speak for Adam and so many other Tar Heels in saying that we are excited to see what happens next, man. We can't wait to see you on Sunday.
No, I appreciate it, man. Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, boy. Well, that was really good. Adam may go out and just wear number 3 football jersey around town for the next several years.
I just got a 3 tat on my bicep. So it's like a little baby 3.
It'll grow. Just start working out. It'll get bigger. Well, that was really good.
Well, I don't know. We're just on a hot streak with the guests, I guess. Or else Carolina.
Good thing we're going to Vegas, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Or else we just have, or Carolina has really good people. Because he's yet another one who you see exactly why he's got the connection he's got with so many different kinds of people. Carolina fans, non-football fans, all of that. And that's why, who knows, but I think he will be successful at the next level because he, you can tell, he takes it personally and is looking forward to doing that. And he'll, if not, if he doesn't succeed in football, he's going to do something.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And I feel kind of like Marcus Paige, I feel the same way. Like, Marcus Paige is going to try and play basketball, and Ryan Switzer is going to try and play football, and they're likely going to have that opportunity for some amount of time. But that's not the end of those guys' stories for either one of them, I don't think.
Sometimes when players finish playing whatever their sport is, you think, oh, that's sad. That was probably the best part of their life.
Right.
I think the best part of his life is probably whatever comes after football, yeah, whatever that might be.
Okay, so let's get the schedule set for you because we got the holidays coming up.
Yes.
Next week, we're solo pod. We will have a recap of this Kentucky game. And tentatively, I think it's time for the Christmas Spectacular.
Yeah, it's
got
to be. Yeah.
So that'll be our only pod next week. Then the week after that, we will have our Sun Bowl Spectacular preview.
El Pazzo.
Which includes our interview with the mayor of El Paso, correct? Have we got that figured out?
We're supposed to do it on the phone on Monday.
Okay.
If you have questions for the head of El Paso, let us know, and we'll ask him on Monday. Mayor Lisa.
So, next week, Kentucky recap, Christmas Spectacular. The week after that, we'll have a couple basketball games to talk about, plus the Sun Bowl to preview, plus our conversation with the mayor of El Paso. Then we'll get into 2017 after that. Maybe we'll have the El Paso if we deem it to be arable, which questionable. But we'll have that. We've got to choose the sunglasses. There's a lot to do. There's a lot coming up. We've really just, much like Ryan Switzer, the best of the pod is still in the it's still to come.
Did you have any idea when the calendar turned to 2016 that the end of your 2016 would be so pod-centric?
Trust me, I did not. All right, so we've got a lot of fun things coming up. Hope you have fun today. We'll talk to you next week on the Carolina Insider.
From Learfield.